Okay, we are back at you today. The Dan Time Podcast. Moving forward here, always trying to have a new guest every week. Well, I do have a new guest every week, but I love for it to be a surprise. I don't do any promotion a day or two ahead of time. It's just every Sunday, here's your surprise new guest. And way back, I guess, the early episodes, I put a disclaimer out that I don't have just any old Dan on the show for the sake of having an interview. I kind of comb the various corners of the world of the internet, and especially with singer-songwriters, if it's something that I connect with, and first of all, there has to be a buy-in from the guests that they get the joke, they like the concept, then we go forward with it. So Dan Time, for those of you who have never listened to the show, it is frequently me talking to other Dans or Daniel or the family of names, as I say. If we expanded out a few months ago to Dana, we had our first Dana guest, Dana Wiley from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Please check out her catalog of music. She's always got some really interesting and eclectic projects going on. But you know, I talk to people with different names, or someone may have just one silly Dan story, or there's just people from the network. But today, Dana Perry is my guest. Madison, Wisconsin-based Evo folk artist. She's been making music passionately for 30 years. And for over the past 15 or so years, focusing on guitar and songwriting. Dana has released 7 albums total. Now, 3 of them are probably the most accessible that you can find on your streaming platforms. And we'll get into a couple of them today. Now and Again, released March of 23, and Tunes on the Battlefield. But Dana's a 15-time winner at the Madison Area Music Association Awards, Acoustic Guitarist of the Year 2019, Folk Americana Performer of the Year 2020, and Best Female Vocalist 2021. Dana, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your story today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
How are things in... oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm doing this. I'm the guy that doesn't like to talk about the weather, but I'm in Pensacola, Florida. You're in Madison, Wisconsin. What is the first week of May look like up there in Madison?
Oh, it's beautiful, of course. We look forward to it every year. The winter this year was incredibly mild compared to what we usually have. So it felt like we definitely had an early spring. Yeah, everything's in full bloom. We had some heavy rain, but it's needed. It's beautiful, of course. Perfect time of year for Madison.
Now, I didn't know that was going to be a lead-in for one of the songs that I wanted to highlight, but we'll bounce around a little bit on the episode here, past, present, and future, but on the song, Everything is Moving, I love this. I love when artists do this. They call out their hometown or their current locale, and you sing, oh, Madison, how I love this town. There's plenty of room to grow, and love is all around. So it sounds like you have... set your roots there in Madison, and tell me a little bit about the area and the scene. And
yeah, I really have. You know, it's interesting. I've lived here probably going on 12 years now, and you know, my partner and I we're kind of wanderers. You know, we kind of live on the road from time to time, and you know, a friend of ours was born and raised here in Madison, and had said, you know, he was into my music, and he's like, you know, Madison would really love your music, and you would just love Madison music. And we were like, well, let's go check it out. We'll see what it's like, you know. So I did a string of open mics here for about a week, and yeah, the response was great. And I love that there was so much accessible music. This was probably about 2013, so yeah, maybe 11 years, somewhere around there. And it was amazing. There was open mics every night of the week. There was such great talent, great musicians, a really eclectic taste of music, which I really loved. And I went, you know, this might be the place to be. Let's hang out. Let's just, you know, we'll spend like a year or two here, and we'll just kind of soak in the scene, and then we'll move on. But fast forward, you know, 11 years, we're like, okay, like it's, we really kind of fell in love. And the music scene is definitely a big part of that. I do a lot here. I wear many hats, and I've been in town a long time. So, and it's been a really supportive, nurturing place to be.
Isn't it great how that happens? And the community takes you in, you take all of it in, and you start meeting like-minded folks. And
absolutely. That's how you know you found a good spot. So
now, when you were growing up or your birthplace and where you were when you were 5 or 10 or 14 years old? What were some of those, where'd you live back then?
Oh, I was originally bounced around. My family moved around a lot, but mostly in like northern Illinois, kind of Lake County, kind of that area, stone's throw from the Wisconsin border. So I kind of grew up there. And then I went to college at Western Illinois University, which is more southern. I lived there for maybe about a couple. I went to college and then I just kind of had nowhere else to go. So I was like, oh, let's, you know, stay here. We'll just... And, you know, I kind of started writing songs there around my college town and then, yeah, bounced around for a while and then moved to Madison in 2013. So stayed pretty active with music in Illinois and stuff, but didn't really find my groove till I officially moved here.
I know you've made your mark on that area. Have some of the players that have appeared on your previous records, are those people that you've picked up along the way? And are those all good friends, or is it sometimes just someone that's like available to play on the record, or these people that you have relationships with?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, that's a great question, actually, because there are plenty of really talented session musicians and really all over Wisconsin area and the Midwest in general, but there's definitely a lot of great hired guns, as we would say, for sure. But I'm lucky enough to have found some people that are pretty consistent playing with me for several years now, Jenna Jonas being one of them. We've been together almost 10 years. She's been my drummer pretty exclusively. I think I might have just lightly jammed with a couple others for fun, but whenever it comes to shows and albums and stuff like that, it's always Jenna Jonas on drums for sure. And I was lucky enough to meet her through working with Madison Girls Rock Camp, and we connected there. And yeah, it's been a really beautiful relationship with her for sure. And Dan Kennedy was an addition about halfway through. I'd say it's hard to say. Dan's one of those guys that just kind of comes into your life and you feel like you've known each other forever, yeah, but you can't remember when you met. You know? Like, I think we met and knew of each other for like a handful of years, and then but we didn't really like start hanging out or jamming together until basically I kind of needed a good hired gun, and I just kept using him, and he kept coming back for some reason. Like, he's so good, and he's just such a great energy and a great presence and great vibe that it's hard not to default to him now, you know. Every time it's like obvious, you know, when it comes time for the band, because I do solo, I do duo with Jenna, or when I need a full band or bass player or like a solid person to record with, it's always Dan Kennedy for sure.
I love Dan's, yeah. I don't want to interrupt, but his sound on the Now and Again album, I mean, every track,
yeah,
he's got
so
a huge
good
presence on there.
He really does, and I'm so happy about that. And that's what's great about his playing, is he does such a good job of staying so comfortably in a mix, whether it's live or recording, yet at the same time making his presence known. You know, like, you're like, man, I really love that bass line, or I really love that bass player. So he's really good about that fine line for sure. And then of course, any harmonies that are on my album, most of the harmonies are my good friend Kelly Hepper. She's a tremendous songwriter herself and puts out several recordings and plays a lot of shows. And I always call her my sister in harmony. She just kind of, they just flow out of her. She's always got these brilliant ideas, and she's just willing to layer and layer, you know, and always give me the time. And we do live shows together too. So yeah, it's great. I'm really lucky.
Jenna's playing as well. I really like her cymbal work, some of the swells and crashes, and she can go.
Yeah, she's very tasteful.
You know, some of the songs call for a little breakneck period, and she can get into the high tempo, and then I really like her versatility.
Oh yeah, she's incredibly versatile for sure. Very, very good.
Because some of these songs, they have a little bit of a cataclysmic portion or section. The album,
yeah,
Now and Again, really, really takes you for a ride. You and I were talking about it before we started the call. I shared my first take was, well, this is great. I want to put the invitation out here. I'd love for Dana to be on the show. And when we set it up, then I got deep into listening. And, you know, there's a difference between the first listen, the second, the third, the fourth, and all of a sudden, I'm not, you know.
Oh, wow, right on. That's cool to hear. That's interesting feedback to get. I don't always, you know. The thing about that album is, one of the reasons it's called Now and Again is there's several songs on there that were done with either like a previous band, like it went out on an album I did with a band that I had. And you know, they're my originals, but they kind of went out under a different name. And then a couple of other songs were on another album I did, but it was super DIY, and I just don't think it sounded that great. You know, sometimes with you, I'm all about that DIY spirit, and several of my albums will just stay untouched, and it's still up, you know, for documentation purposes on my Bandcamp site and things like that, to just, you know, make sure, because I'm a documentarian with my albums. I do it just because I want the document, you know. So, and as a lot of us kind of journal, you know
the
what I mean? We want that
chronology.
stamp. Yep, exactly. Here's that one time I wrote those songs, you know, and I want them down before I get old and forget, you know. So it's like, so one of those things, your legacy, as it were, even if it just lives in a box for you, you know. So, because no one buys CDs anymore, but I really felt like these songs were really great, and I wanted to do them justice, and I really wanted them on a really clean, top-notch recording with just like top-notch musicians, and I wanted them out under my name, like out from under the band name, and kind of so I can put them up on the streaming platforms and have them more accessible, because before they were just kind of sitting, you know what I mean, and not really out on the streaming things, and it's kind of hard to do that. So you want everything kind of under your name as an artist, and to make sure it all kind of goes. So and I had five brand new songs too. So I was like, well, I have this hodgepodge of songs, and my partner was like, well, how about Now and Again? Here's some songs from Now, and here's some songs I'm going to do again, you know. So that's kind of where the album came from, and it kind of ended up being an interesting hodgepodge. Like I was pleased with kind of how it came out, and where the flow went with it, for sure. So songs like The Invitation and Everything Is Moving, as you mentioned before, or the song you mentioned earlier, those were on a previous album that I had done, that it was decent, but it just, you know, it was super DIY kind of in-home studio thing, and I just really felt like I wanted to take them to a pro studio and get a pro studio treatment. I'm really glad I did, because I think they just sound phenomenal. And on that particular album, the lead guitar is done by Matthew Lesniak. He plays with a great five-piece band called Cruisin' Round, and he was a hired gun for this project for sure. Because I was like, I need a lead guitar player. I just want someone who could just come in and just rip some stuff, and then, you know what I mean? And he did, man. He wailed for sure. So I was really lucky to have him for that album in particular. So, and then of course, Tunes on the Battlefield. You know, my friend Dustin, he was my studio guy, because we did that album at Warm Glow Studios. Or I'm sorry, not Tunes on the Battlefield. What was it? I'm mixing them up. Dan Kennedy has played lead guitar in at least one of my albums too, because he's just that guy. You know, he plays bass, he plays guitar. He'll sing your heart out. Like, he's just great.
There's
So, but
the Kill the Rockstar EP,
yeah, that one was at Warm
Reclamation.
Glow. Yeah, that's right. That's right. So Reclamation was the DIY album, and I did lead guitar on that. I was still kind of learning, and I think it's cool for what it is, in my own opinion. And but Dan Kennedy wails, you know, and Matt wails, and I just really wanted someone who wails to play on The Invitation and to play on Everything Is Moving. So I'm glad I did a re-record. Ultimate Creators, one from Now and Again, that used to be under an old band I was in, and I really wanted to make sure that song, you know, got some ripping pro studio treatment and kind of solid and under my name. So yeah, I was really pleased. It's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Dana, I like talking about an artist back catalog, whether it's a musician or anybody that creates things. And I
Yeah.
feel like you have a message in your music that I feel like you're trying to share or impart on people, that to just get out there and create. If you've got the urge, you got the itch, and don't worry about doing something that maybe isn't as sparkling, clean, and perfect, and that you won't be a little, I don't want to say embarrassed about. I mean, 5 years
Oh,
or 6 years, like,
absolutely.
you know, I think we live in this age, especially with social media, where all the pictures have to be perfect, and it's no,
Yep.
let's take that picture again. Let's get another absolutely perfect portrayal of us in this moment. And I think there's a lot of pressure maybe on people to just not put out something
Yeah.
that's a little rough around the edges.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I'm always one of those, though, the kind of you kind of look back. It's kind of like looking back on yourself when you were a kid, and your kind of innocence and naivety, and maybe little mistakes that you made, or little, but now as a grown up, you kind of see that as beautiful, you know, like that was, so oh, I was cute, I was innocent, I was naive, but I did this cute thing, and like, you know, and now that's kind of beautiful. I was a beautiful mess, and that kind of got me to this, you know, grown up or whatever, kind of where I'm at, if you consider yourself, you know. So if you look back at yourself like that, but I look at it kind of like that. So, as musicians, especially too, if you were fortunate enough, like I was, to make music from a really young age, maybe you might catch a recording of when you quote unquote, first started out, and it's rough and it's out of tune and it's this, and you're a little pitchy, or the song's kind of bleak, or it's simple and it's just nothing, and you wouldn't do anything with it. But there's got to be that part of you that's like, that's beautiful. Like, listen to that. That was me just starting
Yes.
out. I was just getting my feet wet. I did it myself. I didn't wait for anybody. I didn't make anything dependent on anything. I just did that, and I really appreciate where that is. So I think that's one of the reasons I kind of do celebrate that kind of stuff, just because I see beauty in it, I suppose, and I see, accomplishment in it, and I see it as good time markers, and good just personal journey markers, so to speak, to just show where you are and where you're going, where you're at. And where you've been, So yeah, totally. I'll be on that with on board with that for sure.
That's wonderful. I think there's in life, sometimes you just let it fly. And like you said, you can look back and snicker a little bit at a time period of something you did, you wore, or
Yeah, just oops.
you ever get around people that look at them, older folks that see pictures of themselves from 1988 and they say, oh my
Yep.
gosh, look at my hair, look at that
They're
shirt I
like,
was wearing.
whoa, fanny pack. All right. Yep, absolutely. Yep, totally. So, and that's beautiful, and you could say you were there. So, and then particularly for musicians, artists of all kinds for sure, but musicians, I think it's particularly easy to kind of self-judge or self, even just self-examine too much. You know what I mean? Like kind of in healthy or unhealthy ways, you know what I mean? That are kind of not really serving, kind of really not moving you
Right.
forward at all. And it's important to just keep doing it and keep doing it, no matter what it sounds like, no matter what it does. So a lot of my songs are, for all kinds of creators, I suppose, and all kinds of people on any kind of a journey, but they tend to resonate with music makers for sure. Which I guess makes sense, because that's kind of coming from a music maker, it's kind of generally what I can't help but write about. So
And you teach as well. You're a guitar instructor.
yeah, primarily I coach with an international nonprofit organization called Girls Rock Camp. They're in several states. There's likely a couple Girls Rock Camps in Florida, I'm sure. A lot of states all over the country have them, and a couple countries in Europe. I think there's a Girls Rock Camp in Brazil. Yeah, it's a phenomenal organization. Madison's, I think, is one of the best. Of course, I'm biased, but I think Madison's is just a really tremendous camp. It's staffed by all professional female musicians. And we take girls ages 8 to 18. They don't have to have any experience whatsoever. And we spend a week and we teach them how to be in a rock band or any kind of band, really. They learn guitar and bass, drums, keyboards, vocals. They form bands. They write an original song together. And then they record in a pro studio. And then they get up at one of the major venues in town and play a big showcase for everybody. And it's a really, really great time, very rewarding experience. So primarily I teach and coach guitar with them, but I've got a couple students I see in private too.
Yeah, it's so cool. As I get older, you see, if you have a talent like you do, you can be so transformative in a young person's life that expresses an interest in maybe it's an instrument. That's got to be a very satisfying part of what you do.
Oh, absolutely it is. Absolutely it is. And if you're lucky enough, like I am, to have been with them for a long time, for over a decade. And most I plugged in with them pretty quickly when I moved here. And I'm fortunate enough to coach every session, and we do 3 sessions every summer. So probably every summer we're churning out about around 150 kids who have taken the program. Each summer, so for 10 summers, like that's I don't know how many kids. And we have a lot of kids that come back every summer for sure. But it's really fascinating to see after 10, 11 years of it. I have kids that I've taught, at 12, 13 years old, eight, as young as 8, 9 years old, and now they're in college or they're recording their own albums, they're forming bands, they're music majors, they're kind of taking it into their adult years too. And it's, yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Well, I want to highlight a couple songs here on Now and Again, and I don't know if these are some of the older ones or current batch, but on
Sure.
the Invitation,
Yeah.
I love this line because we're programmed with a default setting to believe that we're always defective, and then you just come out and declare, I'm done being defective.
How could I have known all the default setting. Oh, to believe that we're always defective. I'm done being defective. Well, this is an invitation. Can't hold back, don't run away. I'm done with disillusions. Running ravenously on a train of vivid pictures that is not my own. So convincing as reality, but I can feel the invitation to take control of the motherboard.
That one was kind of a goosebumps moment for me when I heard it. I think on the third listen, I was like, oh wow, I love that.
I kind of feel that when I sing that line. I think it's kind of what that, it's kind of what that line was made for, I guess. It's just that kind of, the song in general is kind of I don't know, I would say a lot of times when I introduce the song, I say I kind of look at, you know, the human brain as a computer to be programmed and reprogrammed. And I think a lot of times we, as we grow older, we kind of look back and we look at the way our brains function and thoughts we have or behaviors we have. And we go, man, you know, I don't think that was me. I don't think I did that. I think that's my dad's voice, or I think that's my mom's voice, or it's my school's voice, or it's the news, or it's, you know, society. I think someone programmed that into me. You know, I don't think that's mine. And I think a lot of times you can accept what I would call an invitation to program yourself, you know, to kind of recognize that that's just, that's not yours. You know, you might have just taken hold of it because you had nothing else. You didn't know how else to do it. You know, we all kind of don't know when we're growing up. So it feels like we're kind of programmed in a certain way to think certain things, behave certain ways. And you kind of find out, go, man, I don't think that's me. I feel like if I had a choice in that, I would not have done it that way. You know, so that's kind of what the song's about in general, is just kind of, you know, working with default programs and kind of inputting something new, kind of taking control of the motherboard, as I say.
Yes. And it's so great that you insert that in the song. I think people need to hear things like that, that maybe tap into something deep. I can remember back to, say, second grade, and I had this feeling like, I don't know if it was something's wrong with me, but something about me feels different. I don't feel like I'm like the other kids. I didn't feel like I was completely unlike them, but it was this feeling. And then it carried all through high school and for a long, long time. And yet, there's a lot of adults out there, maybe somebody like you listening to the show right now. If you're listening and you've always been carrying this feeling that something, that you're defective, tap into what Dana's saying there. It may be, I think you say, I'm done with disillusions.
I think the part of songwriting for me is like kind of a lot of times identifying kind of what's wanting to come forward and then saying the thing that comes forward. So like, and that's a big part of it for me as someone who kind of uses, you know, songwriting as a mantra. You know, kind of prayers, for lack of a better term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of, here's what's going on, here's how it smells, here's how it tastes, here's how it feels, and then here's what I'm going to do. Like, here's what I'm going to do as a result, or like, here's what I want to do, or here's what the truth is. A lot of times I'll do that kind of in a chorus, you know. So for, you know, kind of recognizing the default programming of feeling that there's just something defective, you know, and just realizing it's a program, you know, the saying, especially loudly for me, I'm done being defective, is I think what unleashes the power of a song when you write a song, like kind of, or what can unleash the power of a song that you write, kind of having these bold statements of what you want, so to speak.
Right.
So a lot of my songs kind of have these bold statements of what I want or what I would like to see, I guess. So.
And then a song like The Great Alone, one of the verses, there was a time when I scribbled 12 suicide notes for the world I leave behind. One to my love, one to my best friends, one to my family. So that leaves 9 more. And you say, and then there were 9 addressed to me. Who would have known that I could write about pain? so eloquently, so truthfully, and yet I kick and scream and try to fight whenever evolution comes for me. What a powerful confession there. How did this song come about? Was it an emotional process writing the song?
Yes. I mean, it definitely was. I mean, first of all, I love that you got all the lyrics right. That's great. It's rare when someone reads the lyrics back and gets them right. That's awesome.
I tried.
No, that's great. And you did really well. That's awesome. And it's also kind of, you know, I don't know. I think that a lot of times it's important to hold space for the things that are just really, really heavy, you know, really heavy. And I mean, just really heavy. And I think sometimes, you know, we a lot of times try to put a salve on it, you know, we don't want to talk about it, or we don't want to, you know, or I want to do something about it, you know, especially if it's with things like, you know, just the extra thoughts that you don't want to have, or the extra painful things, the things that are really painful, the shit that's really, really just in there, you know. And I think it's really difficult sometimes to be okay with being in that place, because it feels torturous, you know, and we want out, you know. And I think a lot of times the emotion of the fears and the sadness feels like torture in itself, and we want out, you know. But I think that when you actually meet it and you embrace it and you hold it, you know, you kind of end up seeing a mirror, so to speak, you know. Things kind of, all your answers kind of look you in the face, as it were, if you're kind of allow yourself to meet it. I suppose if that song kind of reference, I suppose that's how I would put it in a general sort of nutshell. I mean, and it was just a time in my life where I really needed it. I needed to, there was too much, you know, really horrible things going on, and I was struggling so hard, but I needed to hold space for the beauty of where I was, kind of like we were talking earlier, you know, when it's kind of a mess, you know. And as an adult, our messes are really messy. they're extra messy than when they were when you were a kid. But we still kind of experience them as children, I think. Like, the thing inside you is a child that's experiencing it. And it kind of feels that way. So I think that, you know, that song for me kind of holds space for that child to just kind of, it's okay. You can feel that. That's okay to feel that. Write it all out. Sing it all out. But at the same time, like, we're always, everything's constantly moving, you know, and that's kind of part of the inspiration of that other song, is everything's in constant motion. So be still, you know, cry, that's okay. And there's an evolution constantly happening, no matter what you're doing. So it's either going to move forward or you're going to die, you know. So, and that's kind of how all things are. And if you're not going to die, you're probably going to get through it. So, and it's weirdly nihilistic, you know, kind of weirdly right. Dark, but it kind of comforting to me. Well, I'm not going to die. Like, well, it hasn't killed me yet. So I'm probably going to get through it. Okay, I'm not just going to sit on this couch for 40 years, you know, so I'm gonna, something's going to move, you know. So it's kind of what it does for me anyway, you know.
Well, so. I think Dan's bass line opens the song and it kind of guides you into it.
She showed me that the whole of existence lies right there in the pit of my gut. Showed me that all there is and ever was and ever will be is alive inside of me. It made itself known, then I promptly threw it up and out in every which way. And then I left myself alone right there, crying, shivering, naked, feeling strong, feeling blessed in my true form. Oh.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And you know, the funny thing about that was I So that was one from the Reclamation album. It was an earlier album. And on that one, Jenna Jonas actually played bass and drums on that one. And she came up with that lick.
Oh, wow.
And we just loved it so much that we asked Dan, we're like, Dan, do you mind just like Danifying that lick and just like adopting that for you? And he totally not only embraced it, but then like had some Dan embellishments for later in the song too. And it was so good. I'm like, you know, I think we need just, this song's just all about bass. And I, you know,
yeah.
And I asked him kind of last minute, and I was like, I know we're just kind of playing straightforward here, and I don't think I want a lead guitar on this one this time. I kind of just want to hear the bass move around, you know. And of course, he nailed it. It was so pretty. I was so happy.
Yeah, there's such a warmth and a depth to his sound. And when you hit the chorus in the song, I think this is maybe my favorite song on the album. I don't know. It's either this or The Invitation. But I think the chorus is the best one on the album. You hit one out of the park and over the second fence or whatever, the old fence. I mean, because it kind of builds and the music keeps on playing, whether I can hear it or not. I like the 7 billion stories. So this is like everyone on the planet, right? Everybody singing it once. And oh, the great alone, show me how to see that no one can sing this part but me. This one got me a little emotional. I think I actually kept the cheeks dry, but it got to me.
That was one of the things that kind of, like I was saying earlier, is just kind of, you know, the world's in chaos, like everything's in constant chaos, and you're just like kind of in it, you know, and no one's going through what you're going through but you, you know. So that's kind of where that, and for me, I had this kind of transformative moment where I just kind of embraced, you know what I mean, fine, this is what I am. I'm sad, I'm alone, I'm, you know, and I felt my heart open, I guess. I felt my heart, that it ended up being called like a capital A alone. And that's why I called it the great alone.
Yeah.
Because when my heart opened, I felt like I was everything, you know, like I went, okay, I'm the only thing here then. I'm totally alone, right? So, and I just felt, I don't know, it was just this transformative moment where I felt my heart open and I felt my sense of alone just kind of expand out into the room and then out into the neighborhood and out into the city. And I kind of, weirdly, paradoxically almost, felt more connected somehow, you know, like, well, we're all alone. There's 7 billion of us. We're all kind of have this feeling of alone, but we're all here together. So maybe it's just one big great alone, you know,
right?
But we're all just kind of doing it together as best we can, you know, and it's going to get weird from time to time, but it's also going to get really pretty. So, you know, just kind of have to take it as it comes. So I'm glad you like that song.
Oh, I love it. Can't wait to hear it. Again, you know, this afternoon, I just, guys, if you're listening to the show and you haven't, and, you know, you can always put a podcast on pause. So I like to say this sometimes, pause the episode, look up Dana Perry. If you're on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever, get this thing in your catalog, get it queued up, spend the next hour with the record and come back to this conversation. I don't care, but you got to hear what we're talking about here. Now, also really like the tunes on the Battlefield album, and some of these songs are particular to the time period.
Yeah.
Which some people, I think, are still feeling the effects, the aftermath of the pandemic and everything like that. But I got to say, the opener and the closer, I think it's they call the penultimate track, all come out of this.
Oh,
The collaboration. It speaks to what people were going through at that time. But, man, I think people still need to hear that song.
You know, it's really interesting you say that. I just randomly mentioned a very similar thing to me really recently, and I hadn't had anybody kind of bring up that song in a minute, but they had just kind of gone across it recently and went, you know, I still need to hear that song. And I was, and you know, it's what's great about that one is I, you know, like everybody else, I kind of shut down and cried into my laundry pile for like a month, and then I kind of, you know, it's like, what am I going to do about this? Like, you have to do something, you know. I have to do something. I can't just sit. I got to do, you know, what do I do about this? And you know, as a musician, you know, we were kind of deemed inessential, not essential for a little while. But at the same time, we felt there were so many people that felt like they really needed music right now, you know? So that's kind of where the whole album came from in general. It just kind of speaks to what it's like being a musician during a pandemic and kind of going through pandemic stuff. But, you know, I was like, no, man, let's, you know, we need a song. We need a song that, some kind of hope, something that says, hold on, let's just, you know, let's let's just hang in there, you know. And I thought it would be great to connect with other songwriters that I really admire, and songwriters that really inspired me. So Kelly Hepper, of course, I mentioned her earlier. She's a big part of that song. And my good friend Kevin Mason is a big contributor. He's a phenomenal, probably one of the most prolific songwriters I've ever known. Fantastic guy too, and just really, really genuine soul. So he did a lot of work on that album. And of course, Jenna Jonas and Dan Kennedy, Travis Ziegler, I think, threw down on that album. Sam Ness, the wonderful Sam Ness. Yeah, it was a big collaboration for sure. But I was just like, just talk about it, man. I'll throw it together. Like, everybody write a little something or come up with a little something, and I'll piece it all together somehow, you know. So like verse one or whatever was Kevin Mason. And I think I wrote the chorus, and my friend Kelly Hepper helped with some musical stuff. And my good friend Maggie Shays provided the round, you know, kind of idea for the round at the end, which was really cool. So yeah, it was really healing to work on. And of course, I don't know if you have checked out my website at all, but there's a video of it. We did two. We did one where it was all just kind of feet. It was a kind of a collage footage of musicians in live stream and in quarantine, because that's what we were doing during that time. So it's just kind of, especially if you're local to Madison, you get to see a lot of Madison local music celebrities, as I call them, you know, like kind of prominent bands in Madison or good, you know, radio folks, kind of people that are in the Madison music scene, kind of all participating in the video. So the first one was there. And then there was one year later to the date, we were able to kind of slowly start gathering again. And we went ahead and had the original songwriters and original contributors do a live shoot of the song. So both those videos are up on YouTube.
Yeah. It's just a kind of a, everybody come on in here, come in for a hug. And people just need to hear that again. I like just even the references too. I miss having some change in my pocket, I think, a little jingle in the pocket, because you're not going to a cash register transaction experience. And
one of my favorites was my friend Kevin Mason. He said, I'm kind of tired of washing my hands and I don't want to change my pants and stuff like that. That kind of stuff. But I was like, oh, that's great. You're so great.
There's some really funny lines in quite a few of these songs, even on Now and Again, but I think there's one, I think it's on All Come Out of This. This one had me, I think it's like a modem or router reference. Sometimes you got to unplug things, wait 10 seconds of silence and plug it back in to get it to work again.
Yep.
Oh, that is so awesome.
Yeah, I was pretty proud of that one.
That is a personal favorite quality of mine for songwriters, is when they can put a little touch of humor into some heavy duty subjects.
You gotta.
We're gonna sit right here till we all come out of this. Take the time to renew. And if you sit right here till we all come out of this, I'll have a hug for you. And I'll be right here till we all come out of this. Call me day or night. Then we'll all get together when we all come out of this. High fives and jamming by the shower traffic in the air, and these city lights don't seem to shine quite the way that they used to. Sometimes you gotta unplug things, wait 10 seconds of silence, then plug it back in to get it to work again.
Dana, you've had the experience of playing some festivals and small venues. How do you change your approach much when you're playing in a little corner of a room versus now you're playing in an open air setting? And how?
That's a good question, actually. That's a really good question. I think a lot of musicians probably agree that, you know, reading the room is everything.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, kind of depends on the space and the setting. There are some, for the most part, I might pick my set list just kind of based off what I'm in the mood to play. But once in a while, depends on the show. Like if I know that I'm going to be kind of background music, as it were, a certain gig, you know, it's kind of a 3 hour while people are eating sort of a thing, a bar setting, you know, certain festivals or certain patio shows, you know, for different outdoor events, you know, I might, I'll probably throw lots of covers in there and that kind of stuff, or I'll play, kind of keep it some of my more upbeat stuff. Whereas, like, if I'm in kind of a more intimate listening room setting, I might bring out some of the heavier stuff, keep it more original. Because, of course, as an original artist, you're always trying to get those songs out there first, rather than your wagon wheel cover, so you're trying to just kind of get an audience for those songs more than anything. So you really take advantage of those. But I also, a lot of times when I get approached for different shows, I let them know, kind of what are you looking for? Do you want, a solo? Do you want a duo? I can bring my percussionist with me, or are you looking for a full band, kind of big rockin' thing? So certain depending on the gig, it might just be me kind of in a corner, all intimate style, or it might, be a full band on a big stage kind of festival setting. Which usually I'll try to keep my I'll I might have one or two kind of pretty songs in there, but for the most part, when I have the full band, it's just so fun, So usually I'll keep a pretty high energy set for that.
Do you ever have people walk up to you and ask you to play a song and you oblige, but you just don't have the heart to tell them, look, get a little more creative maybe. I've been asked to play that 500 times. Surely there's something in that artist's catalog that you'd love to hear besides the number one hit or
That's awesome. I
what.
do often feel that way, mostly because I'm really bad at taking requests. Like I might play, so like I'll play, I do a Janis Joplin, me and Bobby McGee, right? But then all of a sudden they're like, dude, do you know Patsy Cline, or do you know this other song by Janis? And I'm like, no, I mean, I know of that song, but I don't like know it. And I'm not always solid. My cover songs are more fillers, so, but
Sometimes,
it's always the
I guess sometimes when the drinks are flowing, it gets a little later in the night, people feel like, oh, I could just go up and approach that person between songs. They're not,
Absolutely.
they're just playing
Absolutely.
whatever, so I don't have
Now, of course, if
to.
someone's requesting an original song, I will always oblige, just because it's cool that they requested an original song,
Right.
but if I do happen to know it, I do get really excited. Like, hey, I know that one. I could totally play that song, So, but it's yeah, sometimes I'll get requests and I'll be like, ah, sorry, I don't know that one. I'm a big Ani DiFranco fan, so I know like 20 Ani DiFranco songs, but so you got to be kind of way into the, independent, feminist folk catalog to really appreciate a dozen Ani songs. So
I had some friends. We may be around the same age, but and I worked in a music store in the kind of 99, 2000 time period, and we had some Ani
Oh yeah, I was gonna say you
diehards.
probably had Ani for sure. Her fans are no joke. They are hardcore. We are a
Absolutely.
hardcore bunch.
Well, Dana, we could keep going and going. Here we are, it's the spring of 24. Are you always writing songs?
Yeah, that's a good question too. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm always writing. I've definitely it ebbs and flows. I try to put out an album a year, at least an album every other year. I will say it sounds kind of weird to say, but everything I have written is recorded. I don't, some artists, have hundreds of songs and they've recorded. I've just never really kind of been one of those. For some reason, they don't always come as free flowing as that, I mean, I can, but I just don't.
Right.
So I kind of curl up with them a little bit longer. But I've got a couple things I'm, sort of quote unquote kicking around the office that I'm kind of working on. I'm hoping next year, by next year, I'll have something that I'm ready to put out for sure. But like I was saying earlier, I do wear a lot of hats in town, so sometimes I don't always have extended time like I would like, but I try to make sure I travel. I was on the road all month last month, and that was good for the soul to just kind of tune everything out, do a little songwriter's retreat for one to just kind of get on the road and travel. So and play some open mics and play with some people. So I usually try to tour once a year. Decided not to this year, not an official tour anyway. So tour of open mics. But yeah, so I try to, it kind of ebbs and flows. Sometimes I'll just be really flying and all kinds of stuff will be coming out. And then other times I'll just let myself get a little swamped in my other work and it kind of takes me away from it. But yeah, I definitely, I'd say between all of it, keep myself pretty busy and immersed in music things for sure.
I could see where being a songwriter, if you're not careful, you could get a little too intense about it, and all of a sudden it starts to feel like a job. And
Yeah, for a lot of yeah, a lot of people for sure, especially if you're trying to, quote unquote, make a living with music and only music, you kind of look at your songs as a product and you kind of have to churn out the product, so to speak. But I think that that can be kind of a pitfall mentality sometimes for musicians, and it some people it might work for, that's and if it works for them, awesome. I've just never been one that's worked for me like that. It just kind of makes it worse once I make it. Once I go, you got to make money with this. No. So I make more money when I try not to make money with
Right.
it, so.
How about maybe an early influence, someone that you were listening to at 16 or 17 years old, and
Oh
maybe
man.
another influence that's kind of the past decade, or it could be a little mixed bag of just whoever you like a lot.
Well, I'd probably have to say a couple that pop out, because I was born in 85, so all throughout the 90s, there was a lot of kind of forward female musicians that I really, really loved. I'd have to say Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill got me through junior high all the way. And she's phenomenal, and her vocals are on fire, of course, and she's just loud, and so she just says it, and just has these really beautiful lyrics that I just are amazing. So she was really big influence of mine. I also really loved Tracy Chapman. Those first two albums that
Oh,
she
yeah.
had, just folk, hardcore folk. That was like really hardcore early folk music exposure to me. I felt like, I was kind of a mainstream kid. I didn't get a lot of exposure to anybody that wasn't on the radio, So as far as like my introduction into like kind of more roots, grassrootsy types vibes, I felt like Tracy Chapman was kind of all I was offered at the time. So I really embraced that. That kind of acoustic guitar, kind of stories about people kind of vibe. So I kind of really fell in love with that. As far as later on, someone of course introduced me, a good dear friend of mine introduced me to Ani DeFranco when I was in college, which is, prime introduction of Ani DeFranco is in college. So, and I of course absolutely fell in love, and it introduced me to this whole world of musicians that were not on just on the radio. And even that sounds weird and out of date. People are just like on the radio, because like there was no streaming, like there was no internet stuff, you know what I mean? So it was on the radio. So that's what you were fed, So if you wanted underground, you literally had to go underground and find tapes and like records and go to shows and do that kind of stuff. And that's what I really respected about Ani, was she was DIY all the way. That she built a hardcore fan base just by recording tapes in her basement and then making 50 copies and taking a hatchback and going on the road and playing gigs. And I remember seeing her in an interview, like, hey, you're kind of pioneer of DIY spirit. Like, how did you do that before internet and before this? And she said it was all about the email list, just the email, or all about the mailing list. It was snail mail. That's what it was. See, I can't even say snail mail. It's all about the mailing list. So she would physically mail people for every city. Here's when I'm coming to your city. And that's how she built her audience. And it's amazing and inspirational. But yeah, her lyrics were so visceral. Her guitar playing was insane. And she was just so primal, that I loved her. She was absolute huge, huge influence from that point out. So I'd say my style, my guitar kind of has like a really percussive thump to it, and that came from Ani all the way. All the way. Huge, huge Ani DeFranco fan. So definitely throughout college, it was all about Ani and Ani-esque artists too. A lot of independent music. And then kind of started getting into kind of more roots music, like later on, some Rising Appalachia, Trevor Hall, Xavier Rudd, and some, a little bit of Nacos, some musicians like that that were really starting to do a number on me too. So, and then of course, I always got room in my heart for the standard blues, anything standard blues rock is always going to fill my soul.
Love it. Oh, I love it. I wanted to read some acclaim that you received from Local Sounds Magazine. This is from Rick Vett. Perry's vocal range is, this is what I've discovered as well. Perry's vocal range is wide, and she can sing with breathy delicacy or with grit, stretching to hit the higher notes with strength and spot-on pitch while speaking with utter frankness. That's especially on the most recent record, Now and Again. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier in the call, but some of the rapid-fire vocals. I love learning lyrics and trying to sing along, and I like it, a little bit of a challenge there, but I like it. And is that difficult when you probably know these songs pretty well, but to get out there and sing with that
I've just always been in
tenacity.
love with. I just always a lot of that too came from a lot of being influenced by a lot of really strong, kind of female artists like you know like Ani and like Alanis Morissette and just kind of like gritty. I always loved the grit, and I just felt like it just kind of naturally goes there for me from a lot of my influences, but also just because it feels so freaking good. Like, it just feels good to have that grit. It feels good to sing like that. It just feels good in my body, you know,
Yes.
to, and to, in my throat, to just kind of, you know, kind of just spit something out or just belt it out or just yell it. You know what I mean? There's a powerful feeling that kind of comes through you, you know, like a lion in the mountains, you know? So I mean, I'm always in love with that first and foremost, for sure. But I'm always in love with the rhythm of words, that a lot of words just has natural rhythms. And, you know, so sometimes if certain things will just kind of come to me just because I appreciated the artistry of the words themselves, you know, and they kind of have their own little rhythm. And if I can figure out how to get that singing with my guitar at the same time, even cooler. So it takes practice, but you know, it's good practice. It's a lot of fun and worth it.
Well, I'm so enjoying the music. I can't wait to explore more of the catalog. Once again, folks, wherever you download music, you can find Dana Perry's songs and albums. And please also visit the website. This will be in the show notes and in the intro, but danaperrymusic.com. And if people are interested in, we were talking about CDs earlier. I'm one of those guys that I kind of miss CDs. I like the packaging, the jewel case, the liner notes, and but if people want to purchase a physical copy of your music, or is that still something they can do?
Yeah, I definitely do have physical copies. There's a merch section on my Bandcamp page. It's musicbydana.bandcamp.com. There's like some paintings and some bracelets that I made. I do some mugs, and my partner does some glass etching. And then there's a section on there that's got all my CDs as well. But then, of course, I always say there's multiple ways you can go ahead and listen. Of course, you can stream and stuff like that. I'll always send a physical CD to anybody that wants one for free, too, because I think it's amazing that you want me to send you a physical CD. So I will lovingly do that, and I'll sign it, too. So, but if you're looking for it to have the music but not stream, I do digital downloads on the Bandcamp site as well. You can get the whole discography at once too. Sometimes I've had people just download the whole discography and it gives like a big discount and stuff like that. So I think you can get like the whole discography for like $35 or something like that. But yeah, so Bandcamp's a phenomenal resource for musicians. I personally just, they've been great for over the years for me, for sure. But that's where it would be.
Great. Well, people listening, whether it's you or maybe you've got a teenage son or daughter, shoot, I love collecting records and CDs when I was younger, kind of slowed it down, but get into it. Even if you're purchasing something to add to a collection or to start a collection, collecting music is a really exciting and fun hobby.
It really is. It really is. And I mean, I figure if vinyl's coming back, maybe in the next 5-10 years, weirdly, CDs will come back for like no reason. I don't know. Who knows? We'll see.
I'd love to see it. Well, Dana, anything else that you'd like to plug? I got maybe like one or two silly questions, but
sure.
All right. So, are you a wake up in the morning and I got to get the coffee started before I do anything at all, or can you roll out of bed and just don't need the caffeine, don't care, I'll eat a bagel when
awesome
I do?
Awesome question. That's an awesome question. That's an important question. And I need the coffee, man. I need the coffee. I have to. I mean, I'll do it without it, but I'm not seeing colors yet. You know, like I need the coffee. That's the first, I'll do the, I'll be half asleep and make the coffee pot first.
How about on some of the just wet weather days, have you ever had a situation where you just, you're out, you're not going to be back at the house for a while, you don't have an extra pair of clothes, and my gosh, my shoes are all wet, my jacket, even my jacket's wet, what am I going to do here? Does that happen sometimes?
It absolutely does. I've traveled and lived on the road a lot, and I have definitely gotten rained out and rained on and muddied and not been able to get out of it, that's for sure. So you just get dry when you can, and in the meantime, just this is who I am now. I'm soggy, I am wet, I am muddy and cold. and not happy. And then just, but I will not stay in this state. So I will eventually be dry and it will get me through. So, perfect metaphor.
And this could be a long story, but your best friend in life, is this somebody who is just like you, completely unlike you? Is it someone who I like friends and partners and people and like how they mix, because some of my friends were a lot alike and some of them I'm like, what is, like, everyone else hates this person, but we're buddies. And
yeah, that's a good question too. That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know that I'd say like I have like a singular best friend. There's definitely like a small handful of people that I consider that I'm fairly close to. And thankfully, they know and love each other for the most part. I definitely have a couple of friends that I would consider a dear friend. And I know that they do not care for each other. And yep. That happens. That'll happen. So, I mean, we can't all love everybody to that degree, I suppose. We can love each other as humans, but we're going to clash from time to time. So, and I think that's okay. So, but I'd say the people that are the closest to me definitely have a lot in common for sure. And the differences are the ones you kind of embrace and kind of use for each other and to kind of learn and grow. So, always good to surround yourself with like-minded folk.
Sometimes I've found with friendships that people that maybe are a little prickly to the general public, but I'm friends with them and I get them. There's an appreciation there. Some people have little ticks and personality quirks, and they're like, you know, Dan, I don't know how you tolerate me, but I appreciate it.
Yep. And you gotta love that. I kind of feel like I'm that person a lot of times for some of my friends. Like, dude, I know I'm really intense. I just want to thank you for hanging out. My partner and I say that to each other a lot. It's like, I know I'm really intense. I just want to thank you for hanging out.
I think we all have our ways about us, but,
yep.
Dana, this has been so much fun, and thanks for carving out some time today. I hope we could do it again.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
And anything,
thanks for checking out the music.
Absolutely. Anything that you'd like to plug or promote, or how people can find you?
Oh, no.
Get to your house or anything, but like how they...
I live at approximately this longitude and latitude. No, I think we covered pretty much all of it. I mean, everything's on the website. It's danaperrymusic.com. I try my best to keep it updated. Not always the best at it, but either way, whether I'm on top of it or not, stuff that lives there. So it's got all of my music and links to where you can get my music. And then I have like a blog section where I just kind of do some writings, and there's some videos and fun stuff like that. So mostly everything's there. Whatever's not there, that will direct you to where it is. So
thank you so much, Dana, and best to you the
of
rest
course,
of the year.
Likewise.
And everybody listening, or I always like to talk to the listener, hope this was a great experience for you. Maybe you started at point A and I've carried you all the way on your hour drive, and you hopefully feel better about your day. And check out Dana Perry's music. You're going to find something to love there. Okay, folks, have a wonderful week. And as always, see you next Sunday on the Dan Time Podcast. Thank you, Dana Perry.
Thank you.
What does it mean to be the change you want to see?